Welcome to the Harwood Hustle powered by PGC Basketball. We believe in the value of a coach. We're here to educate, empower, and encourage you to lead like never before. This week, we're joined by NBA shooting coach Dave Love to discuss the most important aspects and essential teaching points of developing better shooters and even fixing broken shots. Let's get started.
Welcome back to the Hardwood Hustle. TJ and Sam here, and we have a special guest, NBA shooting coach Dave Love. Dave, welcome to the podcast. Excited to have you.
Oh, excited to be back. Thanks, guys. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Well, Dave, I want to start here at kind of a high level and a little bit of the beginning. So my question is, how would you summarize your shooting approach or your shooting coach approach? And kind of part two of that question is, how did you arrive at this current approach?
Well, let me answer part two first and say, I think you arrive at it just slowly over time. You evolve as a coach. And I think I started off with a theory based on my mentor and what I'd learned from him. And then started actually working with players myself and just being self-aware enough to say, like, okay, where's the problem with this particular player? And then how do I solve that problem? And that forces you to learn and forces you to grow. And so what is my theory now? If I had to put as simple a bow as I possibly can on my theory, I would say it's positive or negative power. So positive power is the energy that the player's body generates that is working towards the target or straight up in the air. Those two directions are the only directions that help us make shots. We want as many body parts as we possibly can, creating energy in those two directions. And negative power is energy flowing any other direction. So if a player is creating energy away from the target with any part of their body, some of that will be given to the basketball, and it will either cause the ball to miss that direction or force a compensating move in the opposite direction, and now their form is becoming less repeatable. So that would be the general theory. But then with every player, you're digging for what part do I need to change? What part needs to create, is creating negative energy now that needs to create more positive energy? And how much can I leave with them so that we're not changing every single part of their shot and trying to make them into a completely different player that they're not?
Yeah, I love that that phrasing. I think, in coaching college and watching a lot of players, I mean, that articulation is good. I'm thinking through some of my players and I'm thinking about, gosh, like unbelievable shooters, like all positive energy. And then I have some shooters that are kind of average, and you can kind of visually see that's where the little bit of negative energy, you know, maybe fading back a little bit, or, you know, the release not being, you know, clean. Like, so it's, I can visualize what you just said. I really appreciate that. I want to go all the way to the like very beginning. So, we don't have the opportunity to work with young kids. I mean, imagine getting a shooter at 6-7 years old and just working all the way through, but it doesn't happen for everybody. There's players that you get after they've shot that way for 6-8 years. Where do you start with? Like, what is a coach looking for to be able to start to build a base of a good shooter?
I think the first thing that you start with is how their hand connects to the basketball and how their feet connect to the floor. And so within those two things, you're looking for in what way are they creating energy away from the rim. The most common, especially with young players, is going to be their hand doesn't get underneath the basketball. And it's partly just due to physical strength. They don't have the power within their body to shoot the ball with one hand. So they put their shooting hand over on if they're a right-handed shooter, over on the right side of the basketball. Their guide hand pushes the left, and they try to get those two things to cancel each other out. And in time, you can learn to do that reasonably effectively, but it is just more complicated. And then with the feet, depending on how we use our feet, we could potentially be creating energy away from the target. The most common example is jumping to the left as a right-handed shooter. And if your body is moving to the left as a left-handed shooter, then you've effectively made the hoop a moving target. And so that would be where I would start as a coach, is figuring out those two parts of their shot. Where's the most negative energy being created?
Dave, since you mentioned footwork, let's go here for a minute. What do you teach in terms of footwork? And let me be even more specific, but don't limit it to this, right? Which is like, are you a hop catch, or PGC, we sometimes call it an airborne receiver, a 1-2 step, a 1-foot step, like, or maybe the answer is yes, or maybe the answer is none of it. Like, yeah, where are you at on all the footwork?
I would start with a hop, but ultimately it's not my place to tell a player the solution. Each player is going to come in with something that they're more comfortable with. And if you're open and you put the ball in the basket, it counts. And whether you used a 1-2 step or a hop into it, doesn't matter. The basket counts. And I just want a player, if they have time, to do what they're comfortable with to give the ball a best chance to go in. If they don't have time, then we also have to be comfortable with whatever is most efficient for that situation. And every situation probably has a different, most efficient footwork. And so it's not my job to limit a player and tell them what I think is the correct way to do it, but to give them as many tools in their tool belt as they can possibly as they possibly have.
When you look at pros, you've worked with a lot of pros, time is limited for the best shooters in the NBA. Do most of them have both? I mean, can most of them get airborne with two and also, come around with one? Is that what you see in the best shooters because they have to?
Yes. I think what most pros do well is whatever they're comfortable with. They get that done before the ball's in their hands. So the universal idea that you guys have talked about here that I would apply to just about everybody is try and get your feet in the air when the ball's in the air. And so that you have some options. You can then 1-2 step on your landing, or you can hop on the landing. But that would be about the only one that I would say is universal. The pros just tend to get their feet set before the ball is even in their hands, and that's where the efficiency comes from.
Dave, let me ask you this. So there's a lot of coaches out there that haven't studied it like you have, and don't know what to say, right? And oftentimes overcoaching can come in there. They're just trying to correct everything, and we know that can be detrimental to a shooter. Curious, this kind of might put you in a little bit of a box, but I'm going to hold you to an answer here. If they could only just say one thing to players, let's just say they're coaching eighth grade students, and in general, you had to give something to the team, right? Like would you say is probably the most common, if you were to walk into practice and you could only say one thing about their shooting the whole time, can you narrow that down to like where you would live in that space is what I would tell them?
Easily. In fact, I had this conversation with my mentor, who's a shooting coach and probably the best known shooting. I don't mention his name, but he's amazing. And we're having this very conversation, and I don't think we need to limit it to eighth graders. We can say this across the board. Everybody can work to improve their balance. Everybody can be working to be more stable on each individual shot, from the kid just learning at whatever age you're starting all the way to an NBA All-Star. Everybody can work to get better at being stable in hard situations. And I think especially when you're doing a group workout, when you have a team practice or group workout, the challenge of those situations as a coach is not only does everybody have probably a different habit that they need to be working on, they have a different level of proficiency with that habit. And therefore the practice, the challenge point of that practice will be different. And so how do you do that when everybody should be working on something different and they should be doing it in a slightly different way because they have different levels of proficiency at it? That's really hard. But everybody can get better balance. And I think it's something that – because it really just comes down to athleticism and – all these people, everybody playing basketball is an athlete of some kind, some level. We were just teaching them to learn to be more athletic. And so the drills that I'll do a lot, it tends to be a constraint-led approach on this rather than me explicitly teaching how they need to get their balance. I just create a problem for them. And the problem that I usually create is I'll put them in partners and I'll have one push the other. And we'll start with a fairly firm push and say to the player, the constraint on the drill is when you land, you have to land both feet at the same time so that you only get one step to get your balance. But then you've got to be stable when you land and go directly into a shot. And just have creating that problem of you not only have to stop as a shooter your own energy, you have to stop the energy given to you by your partner. Not only makes it challenging, but also makes it as game representative and makes it fun.
You know, I love that answer. Sam, before you go to your question, is that a comment? I actually coached last year my daughter's eighth grade team for Sam. He runs teams around here, traveling teams. And a parent asked me, you know, what are we trying to get out of this season? I said, listen, if we could accomplish this one thing, if they could play on balance and powerful, they would all be better players. And I know it sounds crazy, but because they're wanting to say they're a better shooter, they're a better dribbler, they're a better whatever it might be. But I totally agree with you. Like, I mean, the number of kids that would just be off balance, they would just travel, they would shoot the ball crazy because they weren't on balance. There were so many things that went wrong because they just couldn't play on balance. And honestly, the best shooters, I have three or four shooters I've coached in college that I think of. And if you were to ask me, like, what made them so good? I was like, they're never off balance. They were always on balance. So I totally agree with that comment. I think that's a really powerful one. Sam, go ahead.
Well, Dave, let's go back to this. I'm intrigued by what you mentioned, this drill. I'm trying to visually follow you.
Sure.
The player pushes. So I've got a ball. Dave Love is my partner. You're going to put both hands on my arm, my side of my arm, and you're going to push me left or right. Or am I jumping and you put – describe this to me a little more.
How I describe it is you're going to start, Sam, facing the target with the ball in your hand. I'm going to put a hand on my hip, your hip, and a hand on your shoulder. I'm going to count down 3, 2, 1. On one, I want you to jump as far away from me as you can. And on one, I'm also going to be pushing you away from me. And so you've got to land in such a way that you stop the energy that you're creating jumping away, but also stop my energy. And the solution that I'm hoping players are going to discover is to get their feet wide and land in an athletic body posture. But I don't necessarily have to teach them that. I just have to put them in a position to figure it out. And then I'll start to add layers to that where the next evolution would be, okay, Sam, start with your back to the basket. And we're doing the same thing, 3, 2, 1. I'm pushing you, but now you've got to turn in the air and land facing the hoop. And then I'll add a catch to it. I'll add a dribble to it. Like, I've got 7 different layers that I add and subtract to and from drills to adjust the challenge point for players. And so distance, dribbles, catches, speed, movement, defenders, and decisions are the 7 layers that I really try and add and subtract to drills to help players adjust as they're going.
Gotcha. That's good. I got to watch Phil Beckner work out Damian Lillard a few years ago, and they did some really good balance drills that I've used since with players I work with. Well, do you think that so balance can be misleading, and let me say a statement and then kind of follow with a question, meaning I believe, you know, a player could be driving to the hoop, maybe shoot a slight fadeaway, or maybe they what we call a poop pivot or a reverse pivot action, and it's a slight fade away from the defender. I would argue they're on balance. Their body is – their core is balanced, but most would say they're fading away, therefore they're off balance. Maybe you could go a little deeper. Do you agree with that statement? Maybe you don't agree with it, or just go a little deeper on the balance piece.
I think the way I describe balance is in blackjack, it's splitting aces. So if you're dealt two aces in blackjack, you split them. Does it guarantee that you're going to win both hands? No, it just increases the odds. And so the more under control of our body and the more positive energy that we can create with our body, the easier each shot is going to become. Does it guarantee we're going to make each one? No. So fading creates negative energy. If you're in control of that negative energy, you have a better chance than if you're not in control. But I would argue that you have a better chance of even still if you only created positive. The problem is in a game, Steph Curry, if he only got to shoot the balanced shots, he'd probably never get to shoot. So I have my three shooting non-negotiables that I talk about, the three things that I believe every shooter needs to be. And three things every shooter needs to do. And one of them is be as balanced as possible. That doesn't mean that you have to be perfectly balanced. It's just the more balanced you are, the more stable, the more in control of your body, the better a chance you have of each shot. So especially close to the rim, where you describe a dribble drive and a little controlled fade, or I think I call it a rondo pivot, if you're close to the rim and it's not a lot of energy, then it's probably realistic, even though it may not technically be perfectly balanced. It's as balanced as you can be in that situation.
Yeah. The caveat of like the closer you get. And then I love that articulation of the best players in the world, like Steph Curry. You know, I think a lot of times young players watch these players and they make these tough shots and they get enamored with them, but they forget the work they've done and the ability to adjust because they have mastered balance. And so then they can control different things within their shot. I got a second one I want to ask you about. Generalization, like when I go and watch shooters, balance would be number one for me. The second one that I think about a lot, and I'm wondering, you know, if you agree or disagree, I think the arc on the ball. I know there can be too much arc or too little arc, but in general, I just think a majority of players miss because they just don't give it a chance. They don't put enough arc. And that might have a lot to do with the positive energy and the balance as to why they're not getting that. But can you talk about, you know, putting arc on the ball a little bit?
Yeah, you just hit on my third non-negotiable, which is the ball has to get above the rim. Like, we know gravity is going to do its job. I guarantee gravity will do its job. So we need to get the ball above the rim so that gravity can do its job and pull the ball down. If we don't, we don't have a chance. And there's a number of different ways that this can go wrong for players. And I think a lot of coaches end up, if they see a flat shot, they start talking about legs, like you got to use your legs more. And I find very rarely are the legs really the problem. In my opinion, most flat shots have to do with the set point, the position around with the ball around the forehead, and different ways that the players miss that. For young players, it ends up being that their set point is far too low. They have a set point down at their chin or below their chin. And when the ball is that low, as you start shooting it, there's no chance for you to get your hand underneath the middle of the ball without turning your body significantly and contorting your body. And so players, if they have a set point due to physical strength, usually where they're set, the ball is below their chin, they're basically forcing their body to make a choice between two terrible options. Either contort your body where you're twisting your shoulders and dipping one side to try and get underneath it, or don't get underneath it, get your hand more on the back of the basketball or on the side of the basketball, which is going to push the ball either flat or offline or both, or cause a thumb flick, probably more than a thumb flick. It will be a hand flick at that point.
So Dave, I think you mentioned number one non-negotiable was be as balanced as possible. Three, ball has to get above the rim. Did you mention two, or what is two?
I haven't mentioned number two. Number two would be that we need to shoot both sides of the ball evenly towards the target. So on that release, in a perfect world, I would like the shooting hand to shoot the ball by itself and push both sides of the ball evenly towards the target. If we can push both sides of the ball evenly towards the target, the ball goes straight. That part is just physics. Now, we can do that. We can push both sides of the ball evenly with six fingers, with a shooting hand and a thumb, or two hands even. It's just harder to sync up two variables as opposed to one. So all these non-negotiables, I try and phrase in such a way that I give wiggle room, that it's not that you have to be perfectly balanced. You know, that's negotiable. Steph Curry is never going to shoot a shot if he's always on balance. Our goal is to be as balanced as possible. It's not that a certain finger has to be in a certain position. I do have beliefs on which finger I want where, but that part is negotiable. What's not negotiable is you have to push both sides of the ball evenly. Otherwise, it doesn't go straight. And then, as we talked about, you have to get the ball above the rim. If you can't get the ball, there's multiple ways of doing it. I have an idea of what I think is the best way to do it, but if you've got a solution that works for you, and it gets the ball above the rim, then it worked.
Dave, you know, if you had a clean slate, I mean, you hear this all the time with, I think, Adam Silver's recent comments. I think there's a lot of people frustrated with the state of basketball, like just fundamentals. We know players are more athletic than ever, and, you know, they're getting a lot of skill work. But, you know, putting the ball in the basket is more important probably than anything. And I think there's probably a lot of things that hinder players, you know, at a young age. I was very fortunate. You know, my dad was a coach in California, and John Wooden did a lot. And I grew up doing the pantomime drill, which they did in the beginning, where you put your hand on the side, you turn, you're working in straight lines, you're trying to build positive, you know, you'd go 1, 2, 3 with your feet up, make sure the power is coming up. And then my dad didn't let me shoot a lot from deep range when I was young, just to develop my shot. And all those things seemed to help me a lot. But I'm curious, if you had a blank slate, you know, what could we do better in the game to develop shooters over time? What are the things that were, you know, we got more people that want to shoot the ball than ever, but I'm not sure we got better shooters than ever. And what would you do to make the game better related to shooting?
I think the first thing, I do a couple logistical things. If I had the power, and you'd need a lot of power to be able to do this, I would make sure across the world and in every gym we have the capacity to lower rims, and that young players are playing with a smaller basketball. So I'd start with a 27.5 basketball for up till probably 11, 10, 11, 12, somewhere in that range, and graduate to a 28.5. And then guys graduate probably about 15 years old to a 29.5 ball. I would lower the rims at early ages. And I would paint a 3-point line at the free throw line. If we're in this blank slate world where I have control over every variable, I'm just going to take the proportions and I'm going to trick kids, and I'm going to make the key smaller and I'm going to make the 3-point line smaller. And so they think they're shooting the same shot as Steph or Dame or all these guys, but in reality, they're shooting from half the distance. That would be one thing. Then I would make sure that we were educating coaches on the idea of block variable random practice, a constraint-led approach, what the challenge point is, these skill acquisition principles that most are very intuitive and most coaches figure out very quickly and naturally, but a couple of them are counterintuitive. And coaches with the best intentions, including myself 10 years ago, are doing some things with the best intentions, but counterintuitive to how people are slowing the progress of how people actually learn a skill. Explanation, their reasoning on why they're doing it the way they're doing it would make sense. But research shows that that's not actually how people learn. So those would be the two things that I would really try and focus on.
Yeah, that's really good. The basket height and the ball size are so critical. I grew up, my older brother was always in the gym with him, and I was chunking the ball up from my shoulder, and I had to unlearn what I had learned naturally later on because I had to learn how to shoot the ball without throwing it. So I think that's important.
Well, I mean, it's questionable whether you've unlearned that or not. I've seen him shoot a few times, you know, but.
Hey, anytime you want to go to a shooting challenge, I welcome it. Anyways, Dave, don't mean to bring you into our competitive friendly banter, but so, you know, Dave, this is awesome. Appreciate this conversation. I feel like I want to talk about like 43 different things. So I'm like trying to, kind of like you want to work with shooters and simplify it, but so forgive me. But here's one thing that's always on my mind, and it's this. If you look at the 180 players, the 180 shooters in the history of the NBA, the 90-50-40, you know, you have Steph and KD, even Kyrie's in there, Mark Price, Reggie Miller, Larry Bird, okay. I named off six or seven, Dirk Nowitzki, all these guys, okay? They all have different shooting mechanics. They all have different body types. And so some of them maybe did have a shooting coach. Some of them probably didn't. And why were they successful? And they were successful because they probably had tremendous – not they probably – they had tremendous work ethic, and they put in the reps. And – so I often think about that. Sometimes shooting is like the most overcoached, maybe undertaught skill that we're overcoaching it, when in reality, if a player just learned how to go work and get hundreds of reps, that's the best medicine. That's the best coaching. So I know that's a more of a statement, me monologue, but I'd love just to hear you speak into your thoughts on that.
I sat down a few months ago. Oh, and as a Canadian, I have to turn in my passport if I don't say this. I think you missed Steve Nash on your list of guys. So
yes, and hey, to be fair to Steve Nash, he's the leader. He's on the leaderboard of four seasons of 180 that I don't think anybody else is at three. The only next guy, Larry Bird, has two, and maybe one other has two now. But yeah, so yes.
Where was I going now? Yes, I created a graphic. Like I thought along these same lines of thinking that you're having right now, I was trying to put together a graphic for where do we invest our time? Where should, like, what goes into becoming a great shooter? And I created a pyramid of four different aspects that need to happen for somebody to become a great shooter. And the foundation of that pyramid is reps, that you need to be in the gym. Every single great shooter I've asked, and I usually ask when I'm around a group, I'll figure out who is the best shooter, and I'll ask them, who outshot you growing up? Who took more shots than you growing up? And to a man or to a person, they've all said nobody, that they all shot the most shots of anybody they knew growing up until they got to somewhere where somebody was a better shooter. And then it turns out that person had shot more. So we need to get in the gym. The next level, the second level, would be shot selection. You can't become a great shooter by shooting shots that you can't make. So this is in relation to value for the team, but also your personal abilities. You can't shoot shots that you can't make at a high rate and expect to be great. And then the third level would be how to practice. Like, this sort of what drills to do, but more so how to use the ideas of skill acquisition and avoid block practice, create more variable and random practice, create constraints on drills that get you in the challenge point. All these ideas, I think, are at the next level. And then the last, the least more most important thing that I think needs to go into great shooting is your form, your technique, your habits. Like that's, I think that's counterintuitive of what people would think a shooting coach would say is no, oh, your form has to be perfect. No, of all those guys that you listed, no two do it the same way. So how important are the habits? They're important-ish, but they're not the most important thing. Getting in the gym and then learning how to work and shooting smart shots with repeatable form, not perfect form, but repeatable form is the key, in my opinion.
Yeah. Dave, let me ask you this. So in college, you know, I value shooting. So I try and recruit shooting as best I can. It's not always easy, but I value it. But I look at my players and I put them into three different categories, and I don't necessarily tell them this, but broke, problem, or maintenance. So maintenance is a guy that I love their shot and I'm just trying to maintain that, you know, whatever. Problem, I look at it and I'm like, all right, this is kind of an off season, how to build a plan. Maybe there's a small thing here or there that we want to. Let's just say that you're, you know, a college or a high school coach and you come up with a shooter that's just a broke. I mean, it's just broken, mm-hmm. right? And it's just not, you don't think that there's a chance at them shooting a reasonable field goal percentage, right? You can start with shot selection and just keep them away from shots, you know, as much as you can, like can't shoot this. But let's say the player really wanted to fix their shot and it was broken. Where do you start with that? And let's just say a high school player, you have to unlearn everything that you've done. Do you take the things that work and try and, you know, emphasize those? What would you do with a player that shot is just not very good?
Well, you just described where I make my living. Like those are the guys that that get my juices flowing. Like those are the players I want to work with. Because I don't believe that anybody can't – I don't believe people are incapable of improving. Everybody's capable. And so does that mean that's going to happen quickly or that we're going to turn into Steph Curry? Probably not. But you can probably get better. So these guys that are 50% free throw shooters, like can I turn you into – or can I help you turn yourself into somebody that's a 70-something free throw shooter? And then maybe a couple of years later, we just can't let him have an open three. If it's open and his feet are set, he has a chance to make it. That would be the goal. And so where do you start? I go through a three-step process, and the three steps are way overly simplified, but people love steps and they love processes. So I try and give it to them. First step would be identify the habit or habits that are causing that player to miss. And you're usually looking for what parts of the body are creating the most negative energy. Then, once you've identified, isolate. In other words, do drills easy enough that we can actually put them in the right position and let them have an opportunity to learn a more simple and efficient motion that creates more positive energy and get good at those habits. And then as they're getting good at the new habits, layer drills, meaning increase the level of difficulty, increase the level of challenge by making the drills slowly more game representative. And so identify, isolate, layer is the process that I go through. And isolating a drill or isolating a habit can mean going back to stationary form shooting, the traditional form shooting that we see people doing. It can mean that, but ideally it doesn't have to. Or isolating a habit, if a player leans, let's say they lean to their right when they shoot, or is it more common that they would lean left? Let's say they lean left. I would just want to put them in a situation where they can feel what it's like to have their spine straight up and down. And can they feel then the difference between leaning left and being vertical? Whatever drill is going to help them feel that is the drill they're using to isolate that habit. And as the second that they say, okay, I'm starting to feel that, hopefully it's within 20 reps. Sometimes it's within 20 days. Then that's when you start to layer, that you don't wait around until they do that perfectly, but you start to make it slowly more game representative the second that they show any sort of competency in the new habit. There's no sense hanging around doing something very low task complexity or game representativeness unless we're being very accountable to a particular habit. And the second that we're starting to get better at that habit, we should be increasing the level of task complexity and great game representativeness.
Dave, how important is it to, with players you're working with, to track their progress, specifically their shooting stats within a workout? Do you do that? Would you propose doing that as a shooting coach? Kind of layer that question on top of like the traditional coaching of, you know, the high school, the middle school coach who is has a whole team. Would you be a high proponent of that as well? And so that may feed into, you know, you're talking just logistically bringing a shooting program to life a little bit as well.
I would. We're talking about knowledge of process and knowledge of results. Do I want to make the player aware of their results? I would, in order to convince them of the necessity of our work, or to encourage based on the work that we have done. So outside of the gym, I will use knowledge of results. I'll look at your last year's stats to say, like, hey, listen, you shot 53% from the free throw line and 18% from three. I think we need to make some changes in order to get better. In those situations, I will use knowledge of results. In a workout, I'm more focused on the process that will help us get the results. So while they're doing the work, I don't necessarily want to track, even to the point of saying, like, I very rarely, especially early on, will do anything like, you've got to make 7 out of 10 to move to the next spot. Number one, I very rarely do spot shooting where we repeat the same thing over and over again 10 times. But then I certainly won't bring their attention to the results early on in the process, because the results aren't what we're working on. The process is what we're working on, and the results will come from the process. And so I would encourage coaches to kind of look into that idea, like, when do we coach to the results? When do we coach to the process? And I see this mistake being made all the time. Even at the NBA level, there's a coach that I watched a workout from, and he identified to the player that, you know, a certain habit that they wanted to work on, and then created a drill to work on that habit, and just continually was coaching to the result. You know, don't miss, like, try and swish it. Well, if you're bringing attention to the result, you're taking away attention from the habit that you say you're working on. And the either consciously or unconsciously, the player is trying to figure out which master they're trying to serve. Which would you like from me, coach? Would you like me to do this thing in a different way? Well, I'm not good at that thing, so it's not going to go in very often. But if you want me to do that, I'll do that. Or if you want me to make the shot, I'm going to go back to the thing that might be holding me back now, but I think is going to give me today, right now, the best chance of the shot going in. And so we're putting players really in uncomfortable positions if we don't understand that concept of knowledge of process or knowledge of results.
Dave, I got one more question for you before. Actually, I got 1,000, but we're going pretty long. I do got one that we didn't touch on that I would love to know. And this is going to be pretty broad and pretty general. Talk about the mental aspect of a shooter and, you know, things that people could do or to help, because it's obviously a big part of shooting. So I want to leave it pretty broad, but get your general thoughts on the mental aspect of shooting.
The one thing that I really try and pay attention to is is confidence. And I think that's very obvious. I think that's probably what everybody would say. And I agree with it, obviously, because I do it as well. But I try and make sure I put the players in a position to develop confidence. And the mistake that I see being made is some people will try to give the player confidence. They will just tell them the things that they want to hear, and they will they'll just try and in a moment give confidence. And if confidence is that easily given, that quickly given, it's also that quickly taken away. If it's not real, and I just try and tell you, no, I believe in you. You're a great shooter. Just trust this shot. This shot, if you work on it, this shot is going to go in. If you're saying that, and the shot goes in, that the confidence is given. It's there. But on the next shot, if it misses, that confidence is gone because it's not real. And what we need to do is we need to understand that the confidence is a byproduct. It comes from having seen results slowly over time and consistently over time, and having gone through adversity and those dark days, and then come out the other side, and 2 weeks later you're back and knowing that, okay, I have experience in all these different situations. You need to have experience with as a great shooter in order to have the confidence of a great shooter. Otherwise it's fake. And so really I need to do the work as a shooting coach. The player needs to do the work as a player to get the results that will develop the confidence. And I'll just try and highlight the truth throughout that process. And in the beginning, that sounds like a little bit of tough love, where I give them the truth of, hey, you're 53 and 18. We got to get better. But then as we're going through the process, I'll highlight little truths that are kind of landmarks in their journey to say, like, hey, is that the first time that you've gone 10 for 10 from the free throw line since we started work? Like, I'll point out these little things that may not be gigantic things, but hopefully that, oh yeah, that is my first time. Okay. Yeah. I've just seen, or even as simple as, and I do this all the time, if a player airballs a shot, I'm just praying, and it's shocking how often it happens. The next shot is a make, and I'll come back maybe immediately, maybe it's 5 minutes later, I'll come back to them and say, remember that air ball? Yeah. Okay. What was the result of the next shot? The next one went in. Right. And so when a bad shot happens, just file that in your memory bank that the next one can be good. You've done it before. And I'll just plant all these little seeds that I try to make sure are true, that they can just continually call back on, that will help grow their confidence over time.
That's really good, Dave. That brings to memory the Ted Lasso goldfish. I don't know if you've seen that, but
oh, yeah,
just that short memory. So that's good. Well, hey, Dave, if you can just share, we really appreciate you coming on and grateful for your time and sharing your knowledge, your wisdom, your experiences. Where can coaches who are listening, who found value in this, where can they find you, and where would you direct them?
Well, once you're done listening to this podcast, then jump over to your whatever podcast provider and search the Coach Dave Love podcast. I started that about 3 months ago now, and sometimes we have guests and sometimes it's just me rambling on a very specific topic in shooting for way too long, taking way too many tangents along the way. So the Coach Dave Love podcast would be the first place I'd love people to go to, especially as podcast listeners. And then if you're on social media, just Coach Dave Love on Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube. I've got a ton of free content out there. But and then sign up for my newsletter on CoachDaveLove.com.
Well, Dave, we appreciate you and appreciate your time. And we are the Hardwood Hustle for TJ and for Sam. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the Hardwood Hustle, where we believe in the value of a coach. We also want to make sure you know about our coaching resources and freebies available to you at pgchustle.com. We have a workshop, a Read and React masterclass, and effective practice planning tips to help you enhance your coaching. Get started at pgchustle.com. From the Hardwood Hustle team, thanks again. We can't wait to be with you again next week.